Hello, and welcome to the Monthly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting some of the comics we got this month, a few from DC, a few from Marvel, and a few from some of the other publishers. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. In this monthly comic spotlight, James and I are going to talk about some of the comics we read in April 2026. James, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. How are you doing, John?
I'm doing all right. Now, I want to be clear, it's what we read, not what came out, because I am still playing catch up on a few things, and more importantly, I'm not playing catch up on a lot of things.
Yeah.
I've got to admit, because of other things I've got going on, I just haven't been reading as much as I had been prior to going digital. That's not to say it's the going digital that's done it. It's just, I think, coincided with that.
Yeah, I would agree with you. And interesting enough, I think the switch to digital, and we had to almost wait for things to catch up. You know what I mean? Because we had bought comics and I was getting the comics in my box. And so I didn't really get into that digital whatever. And there was a break for me. And so I noticed with myself, I got way more comfortable. And I found it way more enjoyable reading very little. And I don't mean that like I don't like reading, but I was reading a lot of stuff that was okay and that I didn't really enjoy just because I've always read it. And now I'm just reading things I really like. And if I don't like it, see you later. I jump in and out on a whim. And that's where I am.
I am finding I'm much more intentional with what I'm reading.
Yeah.
Because I basically go in with a plan of here's what I think I want to talk about. So I better read that. And I think your point about the break we had, because we'd gotten stuff up through the end of December.
Correct.
And then we had to wait at least a month or two before things started kicking in digitally. I think we're just now getting to the point where a few of the things are starting to show up on Marvel, but I get so little Marvel that I'm waiting for that to build up to a critical mass worth reading that it's really kind of, and I've always been concerned about this, what would it take to break the habit of somebody reading on a regular basis?
Yeah.
And I don't think it takes that much. And I think for me, at least, that switch from going on the physical, waiting for it to the digital side to catch up, is part of why I'm not reading as much. I've kind of gotten out of the habit.
Yeah, I got out of the habit, and what I'm realizing is it doesn't matter what it is for me. And exercise, going to the gym, playing video games, reading comic books, whatever it is that you want to use as the example, we're creatures of habit. And so I go in and I would open up the previews catalog. I got it, so I have to open it up, and I'd sit there with my red marker while I'm watching TV, and I'd circle the things I wanted. And so that all kind of changes. And whenever anything changes, like I go on vacation and I come back, to get me back into the habit of exercise, it's hard. It's difficult. Mm-hmm. Getting me back into playing a video game is hard if you haven't done it for a while, because you're just like, it's habit forming. So like, if you break that habit, and comic books are a habit, I don't want to ever spend that much money again like I was.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't ever want the clutter that I'm still one day going to have to deal with. And I just want to go in and read a few things that I enjoy, and I'm happy with that. And if Marvel and DC are writing to a younger readership that is not me, I'm cool with that. I'll read my Red Coat when it comes out, or my Geiger, or maybe whatever comic it is that's written for me. Or if there's none that are written for me, I'm completely content going to the book club and we reminisce about our childhood and things that we read back in the day. And that's where I am.
Yeah, I definitely think that what the target audience they're writing for and where I'm at in life, there's not as much of an overlap as I feel there. Not that I feel there ought to be, but as much as I would like there to be.
Yeah, it seems like there's a real push to, and I don't know if they're doing it well or not, because once again, you can't ask me a 52-year-old dude. But I think they're trying to market to, let's say, 18, 19-year-olds, I'm guessing.
Is that age group even in either comic shops or hitting the apps or reading the comics to begin with?
No, and I don't know what they like, and I don't want to know what they like, because I'm interested in 52-year-old stuff. And that's a thing. I think it's like they're going to target that audience, younger readership, and I don't think they're there, and I don't think they're ever going to jump on board. And I think this could be an end, not so much like a boom and bust in the 90s or anything, but where you're just not selling to the people who always bought it, and the people who always bought it are kind of like aging out is where we're headed, I feel like.
I don't mind them targeting a younger age group. I mind them doing it at the expense of the existing readership.
Yeah, I would agree. It's a little bit of, I hate to say disrespectful, but hey, we're the ones who carried the weight of this thing, and now you feel kind of pushed aside. You know what I mean?
Well, it's a bad business decision.
It really is.
It's one thing to expand your audience, and going for the younger readers is a smart way to do it.
Yeah.
It's another thing, though, to do it and cut off or alienate your existing readers.
Yeah, and there's numerous times in history where companies who did things a certain way and they had a certain customer base that bought and supported them at that level, but they weren't growing. And so they completely changed their business model and ended up destroying the existing user base they had, customer base, and they didn't really invigorate anything new, and the company goes out of business. And I feel like that's kind of where we're headed, other than GoFundMes, Indiegogos, maybe Image doing their stuff. But if comic shops are fewer and fewer and fewer, Image will be a digital thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And that's kind of what it'll be. Order the book if you really like it, or pick it up in a bookshop, or go to Amazon, wherever it is.
But then you're selling to the core audience. And if you're not writing for the core audience, that isn't going to last. Even if you are writing for that core audience, it's going to dwindle because you're not getting new people into it.
Yeah. And it's so hard to say without the numbers. When you had the numbers, we could really kind of, I don't want to say predict, but you could kind of guess what's happening. But now I feel like we're completely in the dark. And so I just go with, I'm not happy with the big two in general. Not specifically. There's some things that are okay or good. And then I don't think they're doing gangbusters. They could be. We don't know because nobody has a number other than a sensationalized piece. None of us know.
We have other secondary indications.
Yeah.
The fact that most comics are miniseries means that they can't seem to sustain ongoing titles.
Correct.
So there's plenty of anecdotal evidence that points towards sales haven't gotten any better than they were prior to the pandemic. I would hazard a guess they're a bit worse than they were.
Yes.
But that's a guess.
Me too.
But it's a very educated one on having closely followed the numbers for well over two decades.
And so I think you and I are kind of like in a similar place. I don't want to say the same place, but in our lives and stuff, that I'm glad I pulled back, saved some money, because I didn't want to be dumping hundreds of dollars into something that I was getting minimal enjoyment out of what I was getting.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I feel completely comfortable. I'm like, I invested just a tiny bit and I can read as much as I want, which is whatever I really want to read. If I want to read Geoff Johns only, that's all I read. And that's just where I am.
I think one question we may want to do, maybe as part of the June Q&A or between June, July, when we're at the half year mark.
Yeah.
Which of the apps do we feel are worth continuing with?
Yeah, that'd be good. I'm cool with that.
Because I got to say right now, because of the 3-month delay and how little I'm reading from Marvel, that's a hard one to say, yeah, I should definitely keep going with that.
I think the 3-month delay kills it, in my opinion. DC's a little bit smoother transition.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel is very difficult to transition. And I think Global Comics is kind of cool just for the Image stuff. That's literally what I use it for.
I don't know that I've really read much of anything from Marvel this year because I'm waiting for the app to catch up.
I've read something. But what I've read, I kind of stumbled into, and I just keep reading that one Hulk thing.
I take it back. It was whatever crossover did, the Thor Flash one.
Okay.
That was a Marvel thing. But again, it's slim pickings. Not that I was reading a bunch of Marvel prior to going digital.
Yeah, exactly.
They'd kind of pushed me out. But maybe at some point I'll go catch up on Daredevil or something like that. I don't know.
Well, something's going to happen one day.
One day.
It'll be a Mark Waid writing it or a Geoff Johns doing a Marvel project for God knows what reason. I don't know. I'm just saying something's going to happen that'll tickle your interest and you'll dive back in.
Absolutely. They get the right creator on the right property with the right pitch. I'll check it out. But I have been stockpiling the catalogs since, I think, November, because that would have covered the January stuff. I haven't looked at any of them. And at some point, I may just say, okay, let's go through the November one, because anything I see there that looks interesting, I ought to be able to read right now, because it ought to be out on one of the apps.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Now it's not pre-ordering, it's what did I miss?
That's where I am. And it's been so long, I forgot what I read, and it just feels like difficult. And that's where I am. I'm like, it's difficult, I don't want to do this. So you want to jump in and talk about what we did read?
Yeah, let's do that.
All right. You want to go first or you want me to go first?
Either way, you want to go first?
Sure. I'll talk about a DC thing that I read, Absolute Superman 16. I did read that. I don't know if it came out in April, but that's when I read it in April. I actually read 16 and 17.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a lot of fun with 16, with that issue in particular, but I was also a little bit annoyed by it. We get into the introduction of Absolute Hawkman in Absolute Superman.
Mm-hmm.
I really like the character, his weapon suit made from Inth metal, I guess you call it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's a seasoned warrior, which makes him more than a match for Superman. He's trying to tutor the young Superman, tell him how to fight and stuff like that, because he's not doing it the right way. And it was a fun read. I was annoyed we are going to have an Absolute everything. And that's what I say, annoyed. I know that the Absolute thing is ending, but I don't feel like we need an Absolute everything in this universe. An Absolute this, an Absolute that, an Absolute this. It just seems like, all right, enough with the expanding of the universe, because I know it's coming to an end. So I know we're going to be teased with this, and I don't think we'll see Absolute Hawkman in the future for very long.
Do we know for certain the Absolute stuff is ending? I mean, my supposition always has been that it would have, but I had kind of pegged that as the DCKO being that point.
That's what I thought. I thought it was ending for the DCKO thing. Is it? It could be, it could not be. I don't know. By the way, do you want me to talk about 17 too, since I mentioned 16?
Sure.
Superman Hawkman team up against a symbiote that is absorbing most of Metropolis. It's not a super brawl. They kind of take it in a different direction, even though Hawkman's been kind of coaching Superman on how to fight. And I will say this, Hawkman is very brash and rough around the edges, and it makes me like him because of his mannerisms. And ultimately, Superman's goodness wins. But I think 16 was a clear winner. Seeing a new character, something shiny and new, was a lot of fun.
Cool.
But for 17 was just a continuation of their journey.
Did you ever read much of the Satellite Era Justice League?
No, I did not.
One of the hallmarks of it was the interaction between Hawkman and Green Arrow. They were on very different sides. I don't say the political aisle, but in terms of how they viewed people and stuff like that.
Okay.
And there were times they would really get in each other's faces.
Oh, interesting. Okay. All right. Cool.
And that was a bit more of a assertive Hawkman than we've seen in other points.
Cool.
You might enjoy that at some point.
Yeah, yeah. I'm a fan of the Hawkman character, depending on who's writing.
When he's done right, he's a ton of fun.
I agree.
We both liked, I think it was the Venditti run.
Yeah, Venditti was really good. And I would tell you, I do like this Hawkman just because he's a little brash and rough, and it's tough to describe him, but he has a roughness to him while also being a good guy, which is, it's fun. It makes him a fun character.
Cool, cool. At some point, I'll catch up on the Absolute Superman stuff. That's one of the many things I've fallen behind on.
Yeah, so those were two issues of Superman I did read. So, all right, what'd you read?
First thing I want to talk about is the DC Marvel Superman Spider-Man number 1. Did you check that out?
I did not, but I forgot to pull it up. So, but you read it. What did you think? How was it?
It was interesting, as they seem to be want to do with these current cross-company crossovers. There were multiple stories in it.
Okay.
The lead one was obviously Superman and Spider-Man. It was written by Mark Waid, I think. Clark and Peter seem to know who each other are in and out of the identities and stuff. That was cool. The villain team-up was unexpected for me. It was Doc Ock and Brainiac, but that made a lot of sense. And there were times where just watching Clark and Peter as Clark and Peter, not just as Superman and Spider-Man, it really made me wonder. I think there was a fun story they could have done here of how would Jimmy have done if he'd been bitten by the spider?
Okay, okay.
Because I don't think Jimmy Olsen would have been a good Spider-Man.
I don't either.
But I think it would have really fit in the crazy transformations he had during the Silver Age. The story was kind of a little interesting because there are a few old school references of Dr. Kilburn over at Star Labs, both of which aren't used much. There was a reference that kryptonite was being used in place of californium. And I'm like, what the hell is that? Does that weaken natives of California? I mean, I don't know. It was just weird. But there was some really fun stuff. It was, I felt, a nice change of pace for a cross-company team-up, because the two were hanging out together in and out of their secret identities and heroic identities versus they've got to meet, they've got to have a misunderstanding, they've got to fight, they've got to team up, that kind of a thing. And it had a good rhythm to it, it had a good feel to it, a good vibe to it. So as a lead story, it was a ton of fun and I really enjoyed it.
All right, cool.
The other features, less so.
Oh, all right.
We got a Lois Mary Jane team up, which was okay. Gambit kind of cameoed out of nowhere. And it felt like it was the writer trying to pontificate, and it was more of an opinion piece than a story, I felt like. Then there was Superboy Prime and Spider-Man, which I thought was a crazy odd team-up, way too metatextual. It wasn't a great team-up. And at first I was thinking maybe that should have been the Ben Reilly character, but the more I think about it, it really should have been Spider-Gwen, or Ghost Spider, or whatever she's going with.
Yeah, I like Spider-Gwen. I don't know why the name changed. I wasn't reading it.
Something more marketable, maybe. But the story was way too metatextual, breaking the fourth wall to the nth degree, that kind of a thing. Then we got a Superboy Spider-Man 2099 story with Batman Beyond guest starring, and it felt more like the prologue of a story than an actual story, because it just kind of sets up and then stops.
Oh, not good.
We hit a Jimmy Olsen Carnage team-up, and I'm like, that's a horrible idea for a team-up. It can only end one way.
Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Why would they choose those two?
But they actually landed the ending on that.
Oh, really? Okay.
Surprisingly so, and it was a short story, as were most of these. The one that I thought needed better labeling was the Jonathan Kent, Ben Parker story.
Okay.
Because at first I thought the Jonathan Kent they were referring to was kind of Superman Jr., not Paul Kent, but it was Paul Kent and Uncle Ben Parker.
Interesting.
So teaming up the father figures for the two was fun, not essential reading, but interesting.
But fun.
And then Greg Rucka, who's the right writer for this story, did a story set on Jack Ryder's In the Crosshairs show. Now, Jack Ryder is the civilian identity of the Creeper, not that we see the Creeper there. But the guests are J. Jonah Jameson and Lois Lane, kind of doing a cable news network yell at each other kind of a show.
All right. Yeah, yeah. That's what all that news is today.
And it's, why are you so against Spider-Man? Why are you so for Superman? That kind of a thing. And it really kind of came down to, at one point, Spider-Man wears a mask.
Oh, that was it. All right.
And they show a montage of, presumably, heroes without masks. But, I mean, you got the Fantastic Four. Obviously, you got Superman and stuff. You got Wonder Woman, I think. But one of them that was included was Captain America, who wears a mask. I'm like, somebody didn't get the memo.
That's funny.
And then the final crossover, which really, it's like, I don't know where they were pulling these ideas from. Punisher and Power Girl.
It's weird. Why?
And it was very clear that Power Girl didn't seem to understand the whole secret part of the secret identity thing. And I think there were other team-ups to be had. I would have had the Connor Kent Superboy, which wasn't in here anywhere, I think, teaming up with Ben Reilly, because they're both clones.
Okay.
I think you could have done almost any one of the Spider-Women with Supergirl, maybe, or things of that sort. I mean, there were other ideas to be had, but some of them, it almost seemed like, wouldn't this be funny if?
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, that's kind of unfortunate. You talked about most of those pairings, and they wouldn't have gotten me excited.
Yeah, I think any of them, if it had been their own issue, I would have skipped.
All right. Well, I'm glad I didn't read it, so thanks for being the sacrificial lamb on that one.
Now, the other thing they tend to do with these things, which I think is a colossal mistake, is there's going to be a Marvel DC Spider-Man Superman number one coming out. I think it's already come out.
Okay.
I think it came out recently. In other words, it's not on the app yet. And the names are too similar. I don't know what silly backups they're going to have in that one. But I think branding-wise, I know with the Batman, who did he team up with? I've already forgotten.
Oh, who did they team up Batman with? Oh my God, you're asking someone who
Deadpool.
Read this. Deadpool, that's right. Deadpool, I read it like 3 months ago.
Deadpool, Batman, and then Batman, Deadpool. And people thought the second one was just a reprinting of the first.
Yeah.
Because the names are too similar.
It is. So they're going to have one on each app. So you have to go to Marvel to read this one, DC to read this one. And I don't know. All right. All right. Well, thanks for reading that. I don't feel like I need to go read it myself.
If you do, it's worth it for the Superman, Spider-Man story. And that's it.
That's it. So stop there and call it a day.
There was a little bit at the end where they kind of did a callback to it.
Okay.
I think it might have been at the end of the Jonathan Kent, Ben Parker one. But that's, you can skip that.
All right. Cool. By the way, just out of curiosity, you haven't read the Ultimate Endgame stuff, did you?
I read the first issue of that, and I'm still waiting for Marvel to get other stuff out. I haven't been seeing any of the Ultimate stuff show up there yet, and I haven't looked in the last week or so.
Yeah. Did you enjoy that first one? I didn't like it at all, personally.
I enjoyed it so much that I haven't checked to see if they've added more to the app recently.
Yeah, I think they did, and I don't feel the need to read it again. So there's that. I'm not going to talk about it, but I've kind of checked out completely on the Ultimate Universe because it's not good. It seems like it's ending with a faceplant in the mud.
I'll let it get some more stuff out there. I'll probably catch up at some point down the line. But really, other than that, the only other thing at Marvel I've been keeping up with, or was, prior to going digital, is Captain America, and they have maybe an issue out of that. So I may wait for the next arc to finish or something like that.
Yeah.
Before going back, which is part of the reason I was saying earlier, it's a little bit of a hard sell for me to say, yeah, I should keep the Marvel app.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Marvel is not putting out much good stuff. Although I am going to talk about Marvel 1 now. I'm going to mention 2, because I did dip into 2.
Okay.
Real quick on Planet She-Hulk. I was digging the first 3 issues of Planet She-Hulk. I thought, hey, this is a cool premise. She's stuck on the planet. Sakaar-sun, or Scar-sun, whatever his name is, died. And so she's keeping the peace until the Hulk can come back, and she's kind of abandoned there, and stuff happens. What really upset me when they had Planet She-Hulk number 4, it, I don't want to say upset me, but just like threw me off. It turns into, once again, a love story with the Jack of Hearts. They gotta always drag in the Jack of Hearts now into every story with She-Hulk, and I just don't like the character, and it just annoys me a bit.
Have you ever read the 4-issue miniseries from, I want to say, the 80s with him?
I didn't read it because I don't care for him. Did you read it?
I think it's when the character originated. I read it and I liked it.
Oh, okay.
I don't think they've done great with the character since. I think the way he was treated by Bendis in Avengers Disassembled, where he like blows everything up.
Yeah.
From there on, he has been horribly used.
Yeah, I'm just not a fan. And they keep putting him in here as the love interest. And I'm just like, I don't care for the character and him being the love interest. I'm like, why is he on Planet She-Hulk? I guess Planet Hulk, whatever you want to call it. I'm just like, ah. So I'm kind of mentally checked out on that title right now.
Yeah, I don't think he's the best choice for a love interest for She-Hulk. I'm not sure off the top of my head who I would suggest.
But not him.
Not him.
Not him. All right. I did read another Hulk title, though, Infernal Hulk, which I had sworn off from buying because it wasn't the Hulk. And Eldis had taken over the body of the Hulk, and Bruce Banner had been split off. That was the premise leading up to this, how the last Hulk series ended. So this issue 3, was an okay read. You get a lot of boring day-to-day life of Betty and Bruce. So that's how it kind of starts off. Okay, he's no longer the Hulk. Betty's no longer this monstrosity. She had wings, looked like a demon, a big muscular demon. But then it goes really dark. Okay, this was kind of like a horror setup for this comic. And Betty kind of loses her mind one night. And she remembers she was a creature. And she was going to open ice cream or something in the kitchen. And she couldn't open it. She didn't have the strength to even open it. So Bruce finds her like literally cutting her own wrist in the kitchen. I'm like, this comic got really dark.
Yeah.
You know, I'm weak now. I'm like, oh my God, what are we doing here? It got really dark. And then it flips to Mr. Fantastic and Iron Man showing up. And they're like trying to track down Bruce. Hey, you're not the Hulk that's destroying everything. He's like, I'm no longer the Hulk, essentially. And they are hoping the real Hulk can come back because eldest Hulk skin guy, the Infernal Hulk, has a team of monsters and is destroying everything. That's not shown, but it's talked about. And so it's setting up maybe a return of the Hulk inside of Bruce Banner. It'll rematerialize or something. Who knows?
Hmm.
But it's very dark. It's not a great issue, but it's the Hulk and I'm reading it for nothing. So that's why I'm still reading it.
Again, sunk costs on the app. Therefore, yeah, it's just your time at that point.
Yeah, and it reads really fast. I can read one of these Hulk comics because it's not very wordy in like 7 to 10 minutes. That's it. So I'm not investing much time here either.
That's funny.
That's how I'm looking at things. It's a win.
Yeah, I can see that. Hilarious. All right. My next pick is I caught up on Green Lantern Corps and Green Lantern.
Okay.
I read them in the order they came out. So it was Green Lantern Corps 12 and Green Lantern 31, Corps 13, Lantern 32, Corps 14, Lantern 33, which happened to be Green Lantern 600.
Okay, cool.
On the Green Lantern Corps side, they're doing a lot of stuff on Oa with the various corps all cohabitating there and sort of getting along, sort of not. They had a villain of Enquire or something like that. It was like water-based. And the pacing on the story was just kind of off because like in, I think it was Green Lantern Corps 13, they spend the first couple of pages setting him up with, I think it was Fatality or whatever. And then they kind of cut to Oa for a bit. And then when they get to the thing at the end of this thing's heading towards Oa and it's going to hit, I'm like, what the hell is this? It took me a while, I think, until I read the next issue to realize, wait, that was the planet this other guy had been on. He's somehow hurling the whole planet at Oa.
Ah.
Whatever. And then with Green Lantern Corps 14, we get Guy suddenly as a religious leader. I forget what they call him. But is there any Earth-born Green Lantern that isn't kind of quote-unquote legendary in some way, shape, or form? Because it seems like almost all of them have at some point led the Corps. Certainly Hal did that, John Stewart's done that, Kyle's done that. Right now, Jessica Cruz is doing it. So to find a Earth-based Green Lantern that isn't the Lightbringer or whatever they're calling Guy right now, I forget if it was Lightbringer or something else that Kyle went by, it just seems like you got to be pretty much a real nothing Earth Lantern to be there, which I think comes down to Charlie Vicker, who was an actor who played Green Lantern in the movies and then became a Green Lantern and off in some far-off sector doing nothing. And then there's Simon Baz, who's, I think, our token, I don't say loser Green Lantern, but non-legendary Green Lantern. That's a better way to say it.
Yeah, exactly.
So the title was okay, but not great. But then over in Green Lantern, we get a Hal Jordan, Barry Allen team up. For some reason, Barry doesn't have his powers. That wasn't explained in the issue, and I'm not up on Flash, so I'm not sure what was going on. It was not a great team up. I'm not going to say it was the worst Green Lantern Flash team up. And pardon the pun, it's certainly in the running, though.
It's certain. That's funny. That's really funny.
It was not great. And then Green Lantern 32, Hal proposes to Carol. There's a big thing on that. And there's this whole bit with Hal having had visions, which I think was from a few issues back, just part of why he'd been going to Batman and Barry and a few others. But again, I don't remember when I read that issue, so they're not really keeping the story accessible. But, oh, here are the visions we're talking about. We set them up in this issue. Here's what you need to know to enjoy this. But that seems to become the crux of the story at the end. There was a bit of a surprise cameo at the end that I was really kind of intrigued for, and I'm like, oh, well, that's going to launch into Green Lantern 33, which is Green Lantern 600, so this could be cool. And then I get to Green Lantern 33 or 600, and it's an anniversary issue of sorts. We get Kyle's origin, which showed a few things I hadn't seen before, but it really then got shanghaied by the writer having a major soapbox moment on how AI is unoriginal and bad.
Oh, God.
And I'm like, well, did they write this plot? Because I think that would prove it.
That's fun.
We then get to a recap of Hal's origin. I mean, I've read that zillions of times and honestly just kind of skimmed over this one. It didn't seem to add anything new or interesting. We get back to that bit that they'd left off in the previous one that was kind of an intriguing moment. And we progress that ever so slightly. It was fun, but it's like short. And then there's another Kyle story that was just kind of pointless at the end. And it wasn't a great issue. It certainly wasn't a great anniversary issue by any stretch of the imagination. And I had decided to read all the Green Lantern stuff because I was curious what they were going to do for that 600th issue. And I was let down when I got there.
Yeah, I remember the Green Lantern stuff had started stronger for me, and it deteriorated as I read the series, which is unfortunate because when Green Lantern is good, it can be a great series. It can be fantastic. The worlds, the teams, you know, the red versus green and the oranges and this and that.
Yeah, all of that stuff Geoff Johns created when he was doing a lot of world building on his run on Green Lantern.
Yeah.
That's when it was great.
Exactly. So I love the Geoff Johns stuff, and I love Venditti right after that.
Venditti had some good stuff. True.
Yeah. It was just a lot of fun. And so that's kind of when I came into Green Lantern. And now I'm just feeling like we went through they lost their powers, no rings. Okay, now we got to rebuild everything. It's just, I don't know. They introduced new Green Lantern characters. I can't even remember their names. That girl and the guy.
That was Jessica Cruz and Simon Baz. Yeah.
Yeah. And Jessica, all of a sudden she can change colors. She's a yellow floating away. Then she's become, it's just.
She's leading the Green Lantern Corps right now.
Yeah. But she became yellow for a while, remember?
Yeah. I don't think they did much with that.
Yeah. And I was like, what are we doing here? And then she became green again. Now she's leading the Corps.
The thing they hinted at in one of these issues, and I forget which one, was that they think if they can find the emotional entities, Parallax and all of those creatures and stuff, which Guy can actually see as like infant versions of themselves, which is part of why he's become this religious leader or whatever. If they can find them and sync everything kind of up, that Lanterns might be able to, on demand, shift colors and power sets.
And that would be cool, depending on their emotional state.
Yeah.
That'd be funny. Get control of your emotions, lady. You're changing. Or, hey, fellow, you're showing a little too much rage over there. Why don't you calm down?
Or channel your rage, flip to red, and use that if you can't focus your willpower.
Exactly. Hey, we're up against a big, powerful guy. We need to get angry. And all of a sudden, they're walking around red lanterns, which would be funny. You could do a lot of stuff with that, like a lot of cool things.
I think they could do a good run on the Green Lantern Corps, or the Lantern Corps, not just green that way. But it's also a bit diametrically opposed to where they seem to be going in the Green Lantern title with Star Sapphire and her kind of becoming potentially the true Star Sapphire embodiment or something like that. So I'm not sure the two titles are necessarily fully in alignment. I'm not saying they're totally out of alignment either, but it was not what I was hoping for out of the run of the books.
Yeah, I can see that. I'm just disappointed with what's going on. And I'm hoping when, not if, but when they relaunch the Green Lantern stuff, maybe it'll be more to my liking. And when I say relaunch, it could be a new writer brought in. I think I might enjoy it a little bit more.
At some point, they're going to go to a new number one and have a bold new take, a start of a brand new era.
Exactly.
And maybe it'll be the same old, maybe it won't be. We'll find out eventually.
Hey, if Ben Diddy wants to do it again because Geoff Johns is doing his own thing, I'd be super happy.
Yeah, I'd certainly check it out.
Yeah, it'd be fun. I love Ben Diddy. All right, over to me?
Yeah.
All right, another thing that I read, which I'm going to bore you to tears, but I've kind of been reading stuff I like. Like, I did read Justice League vs. Godzilla vs. Kong, which I think you read.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't want to talk about that. I want to talk about Skinbreaker, number 6. And Skinbreaker, it's the same thing I've been telling you about. But this book is really good. It's enjoyable. It's a quick read. And it made me a little sad because it's a quick read because I'm enjoying it so darn much. And David Finch is the artist on here. Robert Kirkman's the writer. So that's an award-winning team right there. And the art is just breathtaking. If you ever get a chance, it won't cost you a dime. Go check out Skinbreaker on Global Comics, the app, and just look at the art. It's just fantastic, amazing. And so we basically had an old leader and a new leader back at the very beginning in a struggle, the old way, the new way. The son had taken over, and now the son is aged and an old leader of the tribe. And this guy who was originally the son in the first issue, who is now the old leader again, is on the lam, hiding and running through the jungle, running from a person who's younger and stronger and wants to take over the tribe and wants to establish the old ways of we are strong, you know, we are powerful, mm-hmm. We don't need to be building traps to catch animals. You know, that's a sign of weakness. And there's more things than that, you know, channeling water to make things easier, the chores. But he's set in tradition. So it's literally modernism, I guess you could say, or development or progression versus tradition.
Mm.
And that's what the story is. So you can take this story in so many different directions into your own life. You know, that allegory is what he's talking about here. But ultimately, these creatures they've been hunting on in this realm, in this jungle, are evolving too. They're getting smarter. So they kind of learned a little bit about the traps, but not a lot. But they're especially watching the hunters and the way that they hunt. And they become smarter, and it is building up to a conclusion that I don't think is going to end well. We'll see, just based on the way things are set up near the end of this comic. And we're left with also a showdown between the new chieftain and the old leader, and how that's going to play out. So it's building up to a really cool thing. It's a fun book. If you want something different, I think Robert Kirkman, he's doing good things. But the things that I'm really enjoying from him are the Battle Cat series. And is that what's called Battle Cat from Invincible?
Oh, it's not Battle Cats. It's...
I can't remember his name right now, but you know what I'm talking about, the big tiger guy.
Yeah.
But I'm enjoying that Invincible spinoff, and I'm also enjoying Skinbreaker, which are just fantastic. And that's been giving me a little bit of joy because Robert Kirkman has had some good things, but he hasn't really had a hit since Walking Dead. Like a big, big hit since Walking Dead and Invincible. And so, Battle Beast, by the way. Battle Beast,
that's what it was. Yeah, I was going to say, Battle Cats was Mad Cave.
Yeah, I'm like, what is it? Okay, Battle Beast. But now he has, in my opinion, two hits that he's doing. And it just, you can see he's excited about them. One of them is revisiting a property, but Skinbreaker is completely new. It's world building. It's a lot of fun.
Cool.
Yeah, so anyways, that's something you guys can read on Global Comics, FY. I highly recommend.
It'll be hard for Kirkman to ever equal his success on Invincible, much less Walking Dead.
I agree. It's a different market. Even if it was as popular, it wouldn't sell as much, if that makes sense, I think.
I think anybody hitting the Walking Dead level of success, not just it going for the 192 issues, but then spawning a TV show that went for not only, 10 seasons, but spawned, 4 spinoffs, maybe?
Yeah.
And the video games and all the other stuff. Kirkman did really well with that. And that's the, I don't want to say once a decade kind of success, because it doesn't have to be only once a decade, but I'm also not sure it's happened every decade. But to me, that's the same sort of thing as like a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in the 80s. I'm trying to think of equivalent things other than Walking Dead kind of in the intervening time that just hit and hit huge.
Exactly. Yeah, really huge. So he literally peaked at an amazing time, I feel like.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So lightning in a bottle. All right. You have one last thing, right?
Two.
Oh, okay. My bad.
Yeah, that's all right. You went first. So my next one is Power Rangers Prime. Our issues 14, 15, and 16. We get the Red Samurai Ranger. We get Trey of Triforio, who's the original Gold Zeo Ranger. The story seemed to be kind of sort of building to a climax. The VR Troopers show back up in number 16, and everything kind of ends. And it did it in a way with these three issues that I don't think this was planned to be a 16-issue series.
Okay.
Because it had been doing a slow burn for a while, and then just suddenly things fall into place, and bam, okay, we're good. And I'm like, what the hell happened? It wasn't bad, but it wasn't great. I never really got the point of what created this universe, how did it come to be and stuff, versus the mainstream one. I think they're shuttling this off to the side so they can relaunch the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. The plan for that is to kick that group 10 years down the line and show how they kind of grew up, but not so far down the line that it would conflict with the 20th anniversary show they did or something.
Yeah.
And that might be good, but it's honestly not where I think they should take Power Rangers stuff. And I enjoyed aspects of Power Ranger Prime, but I don't think that's where they should have taken it either. I almost would have gone for, you've got 20, 25, I forget how many seasons of Power Rangers to play with. Mix and match some of the characters, grab one, have them kind of intersecting with various teams or solo rangers here and there, and have some big kind of behind the scenes thing building up or something. Something where you could sprinkle in lesser seen rangers, tell some fun stories with it, show that there's a connection behind all the teams and all that stuff. But I think right now the franchise, not just in the comics, but at Hasbro in totality, has totally lost its way. It's lost its momentum. They were going to do a big reboot or whatever with Netflix that fell through. Now I'm hearing they may do one of all places on Disney Plus, which I find hilarious given that Disney had the rights and sold them.
That's funny.
So I don't know what's going on with that.
Ah, all right. Interesting.
But when I realized it was ending at 16 and I had press copies to read, I'm like, well, let's go ahead and do that.
Might as well. Yeah.
And I'm glad I had the press copies because it's not on global.
Oh, okay. So it's good you got those.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Cool.
So they were professionally done comics. They were not poorly done. It just seemed like they were going in a longer direction and got cut off at the knees.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Last one for me, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I was thinking about talking about Detective Comics 1106. You remember the No Fear type thing that was going on with Batman? I don't know if you remember. He got this.
Yeah, yeah. I read the first few issues of that.
Yeah. This was kind of like the wrap up thing. And hey, it ended really silly for me. What can counter this gas that makes people have no fear? We need to get people to have fear to become normal.
So they basically use what, Scarecrow's fear gas to
counter? You literally, yeah, you solve the, yeah, that, and that's the whole, and I'm like, oh man, this is just stupid. So I thought it ended very unfortunately. That's that. I don't want to talk about it.
That's not a horrible story. It's a horrible six-issue story.
It's a horrible six-issue story. It's something they could have told in an issue or two at max.
Yeah.
And it went on, and it was silly. He's walking around with a cape with little tubes coming up to his head so he doesn't spread the sickness. You remember that? It was just nonsense.
Oh, the portable containment suit or whatever.
Yeah, it was just weird.
That made as much sense as Hawkeye being in Iron Man armor at one point.
Exactly. So anyways, that ended where I was like, this is silly. I may pick up another issue of Detective Comics, but I was not impressed. That being said, something that I kind of talked with you about before, I reread some stuff because of the book club Atlantean.
Mm-hmm.
The Atlantean is... it's Conan-esque, Savage Sword of Conan comics, essentially. But it's not Conan. It's Kull the Conqueror. Kull. So what happened is when Conan came to light, it came because Kull was created. And Kull, the pulp writer, said, this isn't going to work. He's a king. He's got the ladies, blah, 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 blah. And so even though the writer had put himself into this character, and it was literally him in the comic. He stripped down Cull and created Conan, which is what became way more popular in the pulp magazines, and then later on with Conan, Shadow Sword of Conan, the movies, mm-hmm. all that stuff. So what's happening is Randy Zimmerman was on our book club. He was the writer for The Atlantean. He did some adaptation of Cull's stories. He's going to be putting some original stuff in there, but his adaptations were good. He adapted some stuff better than what I had seen before, because the Conan series, or I can't remember if it was Savage Sword of Conan or Conan over at Titan, started to adapt a story that he did, Randy, about a month or two after Randy did it first, which was uncanny. I was like, I thought they were collaborating, like talking to each other, him and Jim Zub. He's like, no, I did mine first, and then they started doing it, which was really weird.
Yeah.
Which I thought was funny, because I always just assume, oh, these guys must be talking. They're not talking. It's not that he wasn't unhappy. He's just like, why are they doing the story I just adapted? But I think Randy did it better, personally. The art is fantastic in it. And the reason why I bring it up, Randy was very forthcoming. He was talking to us about so many cool things about public domain. He was talking to us about comic creation, how he did not get hired by Marvel and DC because of conversations he had. He was an open book. He shared so many stories. He knows so many people. And he's been writing comics for years and just a really nice guy. Really nice guy. He has a podcast too. And so rereading these with him, the writer being on there, it just brought it to a different level. But I wanted to bring it up because, one, I enjoy it. If you're a Conan fan, you will like it. If you're not a Conan fan, you may like it. But you can go right now to Fund My Comic, which is the alternative to Kickstarter. And every one of his projects has been fulfilled. But on Fund My Comic, they have, it's a third or fourth issue of The Atlantean. I can't remember off the top of my head. And there's a project going on right now, and he always has a catch-up bundle. And that's what I did.
Mm.
I jumped in on the second issue of The Atlantean, and I bought the first one, the second one, and the hardcover book that they had originally did. And he said they're going to keep more and more issues coming out, and he's going to do an omnibus. So it's going to be ongoing. He's making money doing it. So he's like, I love it. I love Cull. And so here's the plans for the horizon. He laid it all on the table. I thought it was just fantastic. Good stuff.
Cool. Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. So I just wanted to throw that out there because you guys can literally go to Fund My Comic and look for The Atlantean, and you should jump on board it.
Well, and having the catch-up bundles, I think, is a smart move.
It is. It's super smart. So you can buy all the issues together and the hardcover book if you want to. There you go.
That's where I think so many creators get into a tough spot, because I don't think they make the mistake of not having their stuff constantly available. I think they get into a position where they're unable to keep it constantly available.
Yeah, I agree. I think they're in a position where they can't. And I think Randy was pretty smart. He bought overpaid. He bought way more than what he needed, but on purpose, because he wanted to make it easy for people to get into it who maybe didn't. Mm-hmm. And each one of the campaigns is a little bit bigger than the previous one because of that.
But that's a gamble, and it could bankrupt some people.
True, true.
You can do that when you have a handful of issues out, but one of the things that slowed down the Astro City Spotlights from starting was the trades weren't available.
Correct. Correct. Very much so. You know, one thing I've been learning, not a lot, but I've been learning the comic size by talking to Randy. And then we talk with Chris Brawley, who's part of our book club. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was pretty smart. He's like, we got X amount of dollars for Omnibus 1 of Nexus.
Yeah.
I never read Nexus, you know, but I picked it up because, hey, he's in our book club and he's working with all these creators. I'm like, I'll check it out. So I picked it up. But they took every dime from that and they took no profit, but they have enough money to pay for all of the four omnibi. So it's already funded. It's just everything now moving forward is pure profit to them. And I was like, that's smart, versus like we're living paycheck to paycheck and the money's spent and the book hasn't been delivered. They already have it kind of set up.
Well, if you can assure the people that it's going to go to fruition, not you're getting the first volume and the others may never come out. If you help back the thing, they're in it for the long haul.
Exactly. And doing it the way they did it, technically, if support dropped in half, and I'm not hoping that, I hope it only goes up, but if it dropped in half for the next few volumes, it doesn't matter because they've already paid for everything. They're just making this amount of money versus this amount. And that's good.
So it's smarter them to have done it that way. And again, getting the material out there, keeping it accessible to where new readers can get on at the ground floor, that's what makes things successful.
I agree. So it's cool. I reread the stuff and I enjoyed it just at a different level with having a creator on our book club. It was a lot of fun.
Cool.
All right. What's the last thing you want to talk about?
The last thing I want to talk about is a few things I caught up on over at DC. It was the final issues of Immortal Legend Batman number 6 and the final issue of Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong 2 number 7.
Yeah, I read that.
With that one, the Justice League versus Kong versus Godzilla, I really enjoyed the first volume.
Yes.
This was not a great miniseries.
No, it was bad. It was horrible.
It had a ton of action. It might have worked better as a film than as a comic, but there were a lot of things that it felt like they thought, ooh, this would be a great action thing, or wouldn't it be cool if we did this, or wouldn't it be wild, or whatever. And it was all shock and awe and no substance.
Yeah.
And I felt there was better characterization, better moments and stuff in the first volume.
Yeah.
And I don't know if they're going to attempt to do a third volume, but I don't care because I'm probably not going to bother with it if they do.
Yeah, I agree. After reading the first one was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
Reading the second one, I was like, I've read enough of this. And it almost read, in my opinion, like they did this first thing and it was cool and it was a big success and people had fun with it. And almost like Son of the Demon, hey, this was successful, do another one.
Yeah.
That's how it felt. It felt like that Son of the Demon, well, I guess I got to come up with a new thing. And this new thing was frankly not good. Frankly, it stunk, in my opinion.
Well, anytime you do the first volume of something, you've theoretically had, I don't want to say an infinite amount of time, but you've had whatever time you needed to get it to the state you wanted it to get it out to market.
Correct.
When you then got to follow it up, whether it's a sequel of a comic, whether it's a second album for a band, a second movie in what now becomes a franchise, you've got a much more finite amount of time. You've got certain expectations you've got to live up to, and it's tough to succeed in that.
Correct.
I mean, outside of, say, Terminator 2, I don't know how many examples I could name where the second film in what became a franchise was really the definitive one.
Wow.
Somebody may be thinking Wrath of Khan for Star Trek.
Yeah.
Not saying that'd be wrong, not saying it's necessarily right either. It's a good film.
I loved Wrath of Khan, personally.
Yeah. But so many franchises, you don't go to the second one thinking that's where I should start.
Correct. Yeah. So I wish they would have stopped with the first one because the first one was good and it was a lot of fun. And I just felt like this was an assignment that it wasn't the writer saying, I have a second story. It felt like we need a second story because we don't have anything else.
Yeah. Yeah.
You want to have a job? Come up with a story for this. Well, I already did that. Yeah.
So keep all of that in mind. Immortal Legend Batman number 6 ends the miniseries. I thought it was a decent end to the miniseries. It gets to the end where this Batman has kind of passed on his powers to Barbara Gordon. She can be Batgirl. And then we hit what looks like the final page and we get the end, dot, dot, dot. Well, there's another page after that of dot, 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 until. And we get what looks like this universe's version of the Red Hood.
Oh, okay. All right, cool.
So clearly they've got an idea for a sequel. Question is, should they do the sequel?
Maybe, maybe not.
And could be fun. Kyle Higgins, I think, did a terrific job on the Power Ranger stuff. I think he's a very talented writer. He is off Empire building over with the Radiant Black and a number of other properties and other creators and stuff. I wish him the best of luck. I really wish he would do a title that is more Super Sentai than just Tokusatsu. Tokusatsu live action adventure, you know, Japanese style, essentially. Super Sentai being the subset of it where you've got a cohesive team of heroes working together.
Okay, all right.
Because this had various characters that had the full face mask, bodysuit kind of, I don't say look of Power Rangers because it didn't, but evocative thereof. But Batman was a solo hero. Nightwing was a solo hero that was kind of sort of related to Batman, but not like part of the team, if you know what I mean. Same with the Robin and stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's not like you've got the hero Ranger, normally it would be in red, but here it would have been in blue because Batman. And then other people in very thematically, visually similar costumes with minor variations, be it for a different animal form or what have you, that clearly belong as a team, that work together as a team and have advantages as a team.
Okay, cool.
So I enjoyed this. I'm not surprised they're going to try to do another miniseries, but I'm not necessarily sold on that either, particularly looking at how Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong 2
yeah.
didn't pan out.
It did not. I would say that would be a skip. I'd say read the first one. It was fun and call it a day. Just like I'd say with the Son of the Demon, read the first one. Do not proceed to the other stuff. That was the best one, don't you think?
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah. So I think with some of these things, you watch the first one, and if you enjoyed it, enjoy it for what it is. More is not always better. Sometimes you got to be content with what you have, because you ask for more, you're not going to enjoy it as much.
Well, if it's more of the same, I think they could do another Son of the Demon sort of a story, and it'd be really good, but you'd have to have an interesting take, some way to tie it in to make it be part of the franchise, but stand on its own and whatnot.
Yeah, but you can tell when it comes off as this is an assignment and we need you to come up with something.
Oh, yeah. At some point, 20 years from now, they'll do Grandson of the Demon, and it'll be about Damien's kid or something.
Exactly. And I will not be reading it. Or maybe I will. Who knows? We'll see.
I think it will be the equivalent of fan fiction, whether it's officially published or not, because the audience will have dwindled by then.
Yeah. Somebody's queuing it on ChatGPT right now. Create Grandson of the Demon. Yeah.
I really do wonder about the size of the audience out there these days, and at what point did they fall below that critical mass that's survivable of a big enough audience?
That's where I don't want to be a doom and gloom guy. I'm really don't. But that's where I feel like it's headed, or we're headed. And at some point, it's not feasible. The prices go up and up, you know, $5 to $6 an issue, to this much an issue, to where if you don't just sell back issues as the main income source in your comic stores can't survive off new issues. And if that happens, the digital subscribers, maybe not enough to pay for creation. And maybe we enjoy a capsule in time. This was when comic books were in their heyday. And there'll be like little fan projects here and there from a Randy Zimmerman or whoever doing something. And there'll be a few people who back it and get something out of it or not. There's a lot of things that existed years ago, back in the 40s, 50s, 60s, that don't exist today. And people really loved them back then.
Well, I mean, even more recently, just for a few properties I've been fans of, Power Rangers in the 90s was huge, like a global phenomenon huge.
Yeah.
It's over and done with for a few years now, with them hoping to get it back on its feet.
Yeah. There's numerous examples, not even just comics or entertainment. Beanie Babies were a thing, you know? They were the hottest thing or whatever, collectible.
I think that's a little different when you talk about collectibles or toys that are fads, because there's no story or new creative aspect to them to keep them going.
That's true.
And I think like rock bands and other musicians are a different thing, because maybe you loved Genesis, for example.
Yeah.
Well, Phil Collins, brilliant drummer, can't drum anymore.
He can't. He
physically is unable,
yeah.
Which I think is a crime against humanity. I'm a big fan of him as a musician and stuff, certainly as a drummer, but all around. So there are certain things that I expect to fade out over time, at least in terms of new material.
Yeah.
His music, just like the Beatles and others, will be around forever.
Correct.
And that's good, but it's a finite body of material. And I don't want comics to get to that point where enjoy what's out there because that's all there is.
Yeah, I don't want that to happen either. And I don't think it will because of AI and because of fan-backed projects. I'm talking about like the comic shop and the Wednesday Warrior, the grind like that. I could see that dissipating.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense. And no different than the way artists used to make their money, artists like music artists, by selling CDs and selling tapes, being on the radio. Now artists make their money by putting on a performance in a concert. They don't make anything from the music.
One of the musicians I follow has stated, I forget if it was on a video, TikTok or whatever, but the music makes them no money, but it gives them a platform from which they can make money.
Exactly. And so if you are not a stage performer, you will not make any money as a musician. And that's where we are. It's completely different. But the day of, oh, I made a hit song, boom, you're not going to make a dime. Unless you can do something with it.
Yeah.
You know, get out there and go to a basketball arena and sell out, or wherever, you know, the arena is. That's how they make money.
The same artist who had said not making money on music had played to a fairly full arena.
Yeah. Yeah. Things evolve and change. And I'm just saying comics have been stuck in the model that we're in. I think the diamond thing kind of broke it a little bit. The aging, the not marketing to a younger audience in a proper way while respecting your old audience, that I think things are going to change. They have to.
They have to, but have they? We're still getting 22-page issues. We're not seeing the format really change. We're not seeing the rise of graphic novels. We're not seeing the rise of web comics as a profitable venture, at least.
Yeah.
So I think the model's been broken forever and a day.
Yeah.
That's nothing new. And the will comics survive? I've been having that question and discussion literally for decades.
Yeah.
Before the turn of the century.
doesn't it always feel like we're on the precipice? But it hasn't happened yet. It's insane.
But it's, again, the turkey who tells the chicken every day, you know, hey, I'm the chosen one. The farmer comes out for one of you every day. Doesn't touch me. I'm the turkey. It's great until Thanksgiving.
Exactly. So funny.
So sooner or later, just because it's always worked doesn't mean it always will. And I certainly think that's a bad business model of relying on that. But I also think chasing the next hot thing or the mythical youth crowd or whatever is a losing battle as well if you don't shore up your readership or your fan base.
Correct.
The problem comics have always had isn't that they can't reach out to new people. They have succeeded in that six ways to Sunday over the decades in various ways and times. What they can't do is hang on to the people they've got.
Correct.
The best they can do is replace them, hopefully quicker than they lose them. Usually that's not the case. Can they replace them quick enough to slow the slide down to zero? Sometimes. But you hit a bump in the road on that, you're doomed.
Yeah, you are doomed. So we're going to be here probably to see something completely change. And I just don't know how.
We already have a few times.
A few times.
The pandemic stopping distribution entirely. The breakup of Diamond. Diamond going bankrupt.
And it seems like it's still kind of chugging. The engine's like making noises and smoke's coming out from under the hood.
Yeah, but I mean, I've been around long enough to see the rise of Image from scratch.
Yeah. And Image is good, but I would say Image is good at marketing to the mature base.
Image has gone through various different phases and is the hot new thing back in the beginning, at the same time in the mid 90s, early 90s when Valiant was on up and down. So, are we going to see things change? We see that all the time. Are we going to see things change that fundamentally unbreak the system? That I'm not so sure about.
Yeah, exactly. So it'll be interesting to see what's on the horizon. We'll see.
Yeah, I'm curious, but I read a dozen comics that I've talked about here. Only one of the franchises, the Green Lantern Corps Green Lantern, is going to continue.
The rest are kind of kaput.
Well, the rest I'd pick because they were already ended, but so selection bias there, certainly.
Yeah.
But the point remains, even if I love those things, I can't read the next issue because there isn't one.
Yep.
And that's where I think we're seeing the writing on the wall for so many comics is so many of them are limited series, whether they say that up front or not.
Yeah. Whether you want to be or not, they don't stick around that long.
Yeah.
And that's just where we are.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else?
No, that does it for me.
Cool. Thanks for listening to this episode. If you liked this episode, please spread the word about the Comic Book Page podcast by telling your friends and posting a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. And please, join our Slack community and let us know what you thought of this episode. I do this podcast because I enjoy talking about comics. So let's talk about comics. The show notes, form, and instructions for how to join our Slack channel can be found at www.comicbookpage.com. The opinions of the co-hosts and guests are their own. The Comic Book Page podcast is copyright John Mayall, and thanks again for listening.